The name Koontz has been synonymous with Campbell baseball since the 1960 season. The Koontz brothers, Cal, then Charles, helped close Campbell's junior college era and usher in the Fighting Campbell's transition to seniors' college status. Both of the Koontz brothers are enshrined in the Campbell Athletics Hall of Fame. Cal went on to pitch in the big leagues, then returned to his alma mater in the 1980s as head baseball coach. Charles Koontz batted over 400 twice in his collegiate career, then went on to a career as an educational leader in the Fayetteville area. In addition, Charles co-founded Mid-South Sports, a sports promotion group that's aired high school football and college games for decades. In 2016, Charles was presented with the Order of the Longleaf Pine, the highest honor awarded to civilians in North Carolina. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is our next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with the people who've made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by Campbell Hall of Fame member Charles Koontz. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Charles, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Stan, it's good to be here, and thank you very much for the invitation.
Charles, let's just start at the beginning. How did all of this get started? Tell us about growing up in general and how you got your start in sports.
Well, it goes way back to early days when Calvin and I first had an interest in playing Little League baseball. And I recall one Saturday morning asking our dad, would he take us to the local tryout there in Hope Mills? And his answer was, only if you promise me you'll give it your best. No messing around. Mm-hmm. Give it your best. And Calvin and I think over the years, tried to live up to that. We played Little League ball. We played junior baseball. We played high school baseball. We played American Legion baseball. And then, of course, Calvin was a two-sport recruit and came to Campbell in the fall of 59 as a baseball and basketball standout.
So did you focus primarily on baseball, or did you play a little bit of everything coming up?
Well, I had an incredible senior year. Obviously, when you come from a small school, you have an opportunity to participate usually in more than one sport. Mm-hmm. And if you don't mind me saying, I became one of the first, I'm not sure there was anyone ahead of our class, but there were two members of my class that lettered in four sports in our senior year.
Wow.
I was very fortunate. I made All East honorable mention in football. It was the only year I played football. I made the second team All Conference basketball. We didn't have an All Conference in baseball, but after my senior year, I was selected to the All State American Legion baseball team. But during my high school days, sort of had a reputation of being the fastest guy on campus and ran track, ran the 100-yard dash for our track team.
So tell me a couple of your favorite players. Is there anybody you tried to model your game after?
Well, I was fortunate in the fact that Calvin was a good role model. Mm-hmm. It was easy for me. It was hard for me to imagine following in his footsteps, which I never tried to do. But it at least encouraged me. If I were able to play on a team that he was playing on, then, mm-hmm. you know, we would have a very good chance of winning. Our American Legion team did play for the state championship twice. Mm-hmm. We were runner-ups 2 years in a row. And there were some really outstanding players on those teams. But when it came to identifying someone, you know, I was a center fielder, and I think I grew up in an era when Mickey Mantle was probably a top subject in most baseball circles. But there were names like Stan Musial. I later tried to mimic a swing from the left side. Mm-hmm. Thinking it was Stan Musial, but Mickey Mantle was probably the guy.
Well, of course, those are the greatest days. Willie Mickey and the Duke, Willie Mays, Duke Snyder, Mickey Mantle, all plying their trade in the up through the 1957 season in New York City. Charles, you're a switch hitter, switch hitting center fielder. How did that come about?
Well, if you don't mind, Stan, let me back up and give you the journey that got me here.
Please do.
Calvin and I were only 1 year apart in school,
mm-hmm.
Due to our birthday dates. And he had been here for a year. In my teenage and formative years, I was an NC State fan.
Mm-hmm.
I was an NC State fan because I was born at the early part of World War II and didn't realize at the time until I became old enough to realize that my mom's brothers were off in the war. So I had an uncle that was in the European theater that actually went into Berlin. She had another brother that was in the Pacific theater that actually was with the Okinawa invasion. But then a third brother of hers was an outstanding engineer, ag engineering student at NC State in the early 50s. So I had that NC State relationship because of family ties.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I really didn't have the confidence of playing collegiate athletics. I was not big enough to play football, even though a couple of D1 schools had inquired about film and speed and that kind of thing. But at 160 pounds, you're not going to play too much D1 football. And at the time, certainly not big enough or skilled enough to play college basketball. Although I did come up and play 2 years of JV ball for Coach Cole. But I was truly 10 days from enrolling at NC State.
Wow.
Had already paid a deposit, already had a roommate assignment. And Calvin was here in summer school and was playing summer baseball in a local league. In fact, my dad and I came up to watch him play over in Anger.
With the Anger Braves?
That's right.
All right.
And 10 days from enrolling at NC State, Calvin came home for a weekend and took me aside and said, Charles, I have a question for you. How committed are you to going to NC State? And I shared with him what I just shared.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, Coach Davis asked me to share with you that he's got a little bit of money and he needs a center fielder. Well, I won't say that our family qualified as a hardship case, but I knew it was would be a difficult decision for my dad or my mom and dad to pay for me to go to state. And Campbell was a 2-year school. So I made a quick decision that from an economic perspective, plus having a chance to play yet another year with Calvin, I made a quick change and headed to Campbell. And with the plans of doing the pre-engineering here,
mm-hmm.
that was my plan for NC State, pre-engineering here and then transferring. Little did I know that during the process of enrolling here, Campbell had already laid the plans to transition to a 4-year school. In fact, I'd be in the second graduating class if I stayed,
mm-hmm.
which I did. So I like to make a right-hand turn on 421. Instead of headed to Raleigh, I turned and came to Boys Creek.
So, leadoff hitter, switch hitter. I imagine you got down to first base in a pretty good fashion.
Well, that was a blessing that the good Lord gave me early on. Speed was people have said was my forte. But I grew up as a right-handed batter,
mm-hmm.
and all of the time that I played up until my senior year of college, strictly a right-handed batter. But as a leadoff batter, I was not noted for the long ball. I was noted for hopefully getting on base. A walk was as good as a double,
mm-hmm.
in some coach's eye. So I was a contact hitter, trying to make contact, get on base, perhaps steal second, and get in scoring position. And that was my forte for those first 3 years of college athletics.
And folks, this is a guy who was a 4-year starter and only made two errors in the field and was never thrown out stealing bases. So he's being a bit humble in his recollections of his career. Charles, if you will, I did not get a chance to know Coach Davis. He had passed away before I enrolled in 1983, but I've heard so many wonderful stories about him. Can you tell us a little bit about Coach Hargrove Davis and what it was like playing for him?
Well, first of all, it was a wonderful experience just to have a relationship with someone like Hargrove Davis. I was never affiliated with the military, and if my recollection is correct, I think he may have come out of the military to come and coach at Campbell. I think a good thumbnail sketch would be he was a no-nonsense kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He would expect you to give your best. He was not someone that would get in your face. He would give the lineup, present the lineup to the umpires. He would make pitching changes when necessary. He had very well organized practices. He was a good leader, and I think his military background may have come out a lot. I know he took a lot of pride in, back then, it was a one-man show, and mm-hmm. that meant taking care of the field.
Right.
And our infield was, I think, a number four grit on the sandpaper scale. He would sand it down just as tight as he could get it. But yeah, Coach Davis was the kind of guy you enjoyed playing for.
Sure. What are some of your best memories of your time here at Campbell, both on and off the field?
Well, you know, it started early. And I mentioned the detour that brought me here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the very first day that I showed up prior to the first day of class, Coach Davis actually took me to President Campbell's office.
Wow.
To introduce me to the college president and to say something like, now we have two of them.
Right.
Something to that effect. A day or two later, first day of class, I was telling Coach Marks earlier today that I showed up for class. Professor Easley was our history teacher. It's a big class, our large classroom. And as I walked in, at about the time the bell rung, so the class was pretty much full. And I made my way down the first row of desk, and sitting at the back desk on second row, this big guy sitting there. And as I sat down or began to sit down, he reached out this big hand. He says, "Welcome to Campbell. I'm Gaylord Perry." So that was my first introduction to the legendary Perry Brothers. I didn't get to meet Jim until much later, but I had an early and short introduction to Gaylord Perry. Over the time, though, you know, Campbell was a small school. You sort of got to know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Had terrific roommates. Calvin and I roomed together that first year that we were there. A hometown friend, Alex Warner, who later became a House of Representative member with an illustrious career in politics. And then I finished up with Bobby Pope from Coates, North mm-hmm. Carolina, a truly outstanding three-four-sport athlete and shortstop and co-captain on our baseball team. So, you know, it's the friends that you made, and I can name guys that I played baseball with, but also guys like Mike Reedy, who was back then Mr. Basketball on the basketball court, along with Bob Etheridge and guys like that. But taking you back to the switch hitting portion, if I may, growing up in the backyard, we played baseball in our backyard mm-hmm. virtually if the sun was shining. Calvin and I were playing baseball, but give a lot of credit to our dad. He would come home from work and would take time. He was a semi-pro baseball pitcher himself, and I think he sensed the talent level that Calvin possessed and would ask me to catch as he sort of watched and maybe instructed Calvin most afternoons. But then, to his credit, he knew that my interest was playing the outfield. He would take time to send me out, really out on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
We lived out in the country. And he would hit fly balls to me as long as it took, half hour, 45 minutes, an hour. So the same amount of time that he devoted to Calvin, he also devoted to me. So hand-eye coordination probably was developed along the way with under his guidance. So anyway, fast forward. Always playing baseball in the backyard. My younger brother, Don, six or seven young to my junior, also an up-and-coming pitcher who would later sign with the Mets and play AAA baseball for several years. But in the backyard, he would say to me, bat left-handed and make it even, because he knew I could hit him
right
if I batted right-handed. So his encouragement was, bat left-handed to balance it out, to make it even. That's where the Stan Musial comment came to play. And so early on, I was able to sense what it was like swinging from the left side. All right, connect some dots. I have now finished my junior year at Campbell. As you said, I did hit 400 as a freshman, batting right-handed, contact batter. Calvin had now signed, had spent 1 year in the minor leagues, and had been invited to spring training, and Leo DeRocher with the Cubs took him on, put him on the major league roster after 1 year in the minors. I don't know that I had a change of heart in thinking that I could play at the next level, but I knew that if I did, something had to improve. Defensively, speed-wise, running the base-wise, that was fine. But I had to have, as they say, more pop in the bat. And I knew that the left-hand side might give me that opportunity. So I went to Coach Davis that summer between my junior and senior year and asked, because I still had the local semi-pro league, and I knew that my roommate's older brother was going to coach a team out of Coates. And I asked Coach Davis, would he approve me attempting to learn how to bat left-handed? Well, he gave me his blessing. And part of the story I remember, and you asked about things I remember, first game, we're playing over at Coates, and my first at-bat, batting left-handed, three pitches back to the dugout. As a right-handed batter, I would like to think striking out on three pitches was not normal.
Right.
Second time up, kid throws three fastballs, three strikes, I'm struck out again. So now I would tell you, abnormal for me to strike out back-to-back times. But there I am. A record being made, I guess. Well, it's the sixth or seventh inning, and we have a runner on second base. We're down 1-0, and there's a batter between me and the guy on second base at the bat. And the summer coach, not Coach Davis, the summer coach came to me and said, I don't think he asked, I think he said, bat right-handed, we need that run. You can hit this kid. Stan, I agree. I told him, I will. But part of the story that I've told over the years, I heard a voice. And the voice told me, if I change now, or if I back out now, I'll always bail out. I walked up to the plate, fully expecting, and it happened, the coach calls timeout and comes back. We're face-to-face. He puts both hands on my shoulders. We're at the six-inch mark. Face-to-face, he said, I thought you were going to bat right-handed. I said, Coach, I can't do it. He shrugged, walked away. I go back to the plate to bat left-handed. Over the years, some of the old-timers have said to me that the ball I hit may have been the longest ball they ever saw hit on that coach's athletic field.
Wow.
There was an upslope in right field that took you to the schoolyard. And there was a circle drive, and the athletic bus parked on that circle drive. My home run went over the bus. That's almost my recollection of the movie, The Natural.
Correct. Yeah.
That hit. It didn't just go out of the park. It went over that school bus. Two nights later, we're playing in Anger, the old ballpark. Mm-hmm. I took it out again, this time over the 365 mark. I realized then that that's where I needed to be, was on the left side, and developed the confidence to go to the plate and really, really focus on what the pitcher is going to deliver, which I never tried to second guess the pitch. We opened the season, or Coach Davis told the guys in the fall practice and fall season what the plan was. And that following spring, we go to Virginia and play a two-game series. I was 8-for-10 with only one single and no home runs. So 7 out of 8 hits were either doubles or triples. And that just propelled that senior year. Did not lead the team in home runs. I was second in home runs. But all the other offensive categories, I was pretty much on top of.
Well, and what an interesting progression to go from somebody who you admitted that you were a singles hitter basically by trade, and you get on, steal second, and make it turn it into a double, to finding your power source. And, you know, folks, Mickey Mantle hit you know, 500 home runs from the left and right-handed side combined. And you know, a lot of people forget the fact that Mickey Mantle was very fast afoot and probably was, you know, and until he, you know, tore up his knee. And even after that, he was still fast until the bone-on-bone degenerated. But what was it like to find that power after that not really being a part of your game, Charles?
Well, it was an amazing moment of gratification. And I've spoken to guys over the years who experienced hitting home runs. And there's a sort of a phenomenon that when you hit it, you know it's gone. I mean, unless it just bounces off the top of the wall, you sort of know that you've hit it properly.
Mm-hmm.
But it also developed, I didn't go into a ballpark or a stadium thinking, all right, I'm going to hit it out tonight. But when you look down the line or you look at the power alley, you might think, I could hit it out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it happened. Certainly not to, I was never as strong as Mickey Mantle. But a lot of it had to do with bat speed, as you well know, mm-hmm. as Coach Marks will tell you. Bat speed and making proper contact, you can move the baseball.
At some point in time in your career, you had a scout approach you to talk about, you know, what he noticed that day was your time getting from home plate to first base, and he made a rather flattering comparison, I believe.
Well, he gave me a good chance for the big head. he approached me after one of our home games. And acknowledged that he had already spoken to Coach Davis and asked permission to speak with me, inquired as to whether or not other scouts had approached me. They had not, but he was more interested in knowing if anybody had timed me from home to first. And he went on to explain that he had, both from the right and the left side. He had attended several of our home games. He was a scout from the St. Louis Cardinals. And shared with me that he had submitted a couple of reports on my behalf to the next level of the scouting bureau, and that had recorded my time from home to first, not as fast as Mickey Mantle, but fairly close.
And Charles won't tell you the actual numbers, but at that time, it was said that Mantle got down from home plate to first base in 3.1 seconds, and his was just above that one. I won't ruin his modesty there. Charles, you mentioned earlier that Coach Davis really took a lot of pride in taking care of the ball field. It was known as Taylor Field now. Through the years, and then earlier today, Coach Chris Marks took us on a tour of the Campbell baseball facilities. Can you explain for our listeners who don't know just how much has changed facilities-wise in the time since you played here till now here in 2025?
And if I can make a bold comparison, and first of all, I'm very fortunate to be able to recall 60 years ago.
Right.
I'm old enough to know that that my playing days here were 60 to 64. Picture a city-owned sandlot baseball park,
mm-hmm.
with no stands, no dugout, no signage. And then take a trip to the next town and you walk into Yankee Stadium and know that you played in both. To see the facility here today, mind-boggling. And I would encourage any young man who has an interest in playing baseball and is considering an opportunity to play at the D1 level, if Campbell University is not on your checklist, then you need to shorten your checklist and put Campbell on it. The facility, I came with the athletic director from Febble Tech, my good friend Steve Driggers, came several years ago. In fact, invited him to come back today. Even the additions to the baseball program, the pitching facility, and a return visit to the indoor hitting facility, to walk through the locker room and to see the history of Jim Perry upstairs. I mean, you can't not be impressed if you came just to take that tour of Campbell baseball.
Well, and one of the things, Charles, I like to tell people is, you know, while Campbell may not have some of the glitz and glimmer of of a LSU or Ohio State in football or any of those places where they print money to support their athletics programs, you can get there from here. Your brother is a testament to that. The Perry brothers, of course. Well, of course, Gaylord signed out of high school, but Jim, of course, is a testament. And then there are six players this year who are Campbell alumni have appeared in a major league game. That's never happened before since going back to when the game was invented, when the first year of the major leagues, 1876, never before have six players from Campbell appeared in a major league game. Does that give you a sense of accomplishment or pride, knowing that you were in there among the people that laid the foundation for what would eventually we would see out externally?
Well, yes, I'm proud and I'm very privileged to say I'm a Camel, to know that I came here during those days. But, you know, if someone wanted to pardon the expression or the comparison, look at Duke University basketball this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the number, they had three guys that recruited or drafted in the first top 10. Now, I think five overall. That equals your six playing Major League Baseball.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And just take a small or short tour through Coach Marks's area and look at all of the players through the years. And you think, Campbell? Absolutely.
Hey, Campbell fans, this is Braxton Harris, and I've got one question for you. Are you ready for game day? Well, get your game face on because Campbell's 2025 football season is here. We're bringing the energy, the grit, and the passion, and we want you to be right there with us. But hey, game day is just the beginning. You want to make a real impact? Then it's time to step up and join the Fighting Camel Club. Being a part of the Fighting Camel Club means you become the team behind the team, fueling scholarships, training, and academic success for not just our football athletes, but all 21 of our sports. When you join, you're not just a fan, you're a game changer. So what do you say, Camel Nation? Let's make a difference together. Join the Fighting Camel Club today and help us build champions on the field, in the classroom, and beyond.
Charles, I can't relate because I ran like I had a piano on my back, but the speed that you had in playing four sports, can you have an illustration or a way to share with us just how fast you were?
Stan, thank you. I'm not sure that I need to be going there, but a story that some guys were witness to my senior year spring baseball. It's a practice afternoon, and Coach Davis signals for me to come in from center field, and there's a stranger in the dugout. And I'm thinking, well, that's not the Cardinal scout. Maybe somebody. Well, as it turned out, the college, it was still Campbell College, the college was developing a track team. Mm-hmm. And this was the new track coach. And he had heard that there may be somebody on the baseball team that could do a practice run with his sprinters for a 100-yard dash. Well, our outfield at the time was the football field for Buies Creek High School.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a true 100-yard dash. And the guy wanted to know if I would be willing to, as a practice, run against his top sprinters. I didn't see the need to do that, but I think the coach was hoping I would. And I agreed to do it if someone else from the baseball team could run as well. Maybe I didn't want to get embarrassed by myself. Well, it was decided a couple days later. They marked off a true 100-yard. And so I had invited Jimmy Hester, who was our second baseman, to run with us. Jimmy was fairly fast. Well, we're out there, what's going to be our starting area, and their two sprinters show up. They have their portable starting blocks. They have their silk uniforms. They bring a gun and two stopwatches.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to record their 2-1 and 2. I remember Jimmy asking me where was my starting blocks. And, you know, coming up in the country, you just kick your heel down and get you a pad. I said, well, this is mine right here. Well, the coach had said, the track coach had said, you know, if it makes any difference, I'll run with you so you won't be so embarrassed. Well, maybe that's the reason I chose to run now. Well, anyway, the gun just goes off, we run. I understand he dropped out at about the 50-yard mark and came running in and goes straight to his two clock guys. How did we do? How did we do? And the one who would get number one said, Coach, we got some numbers we haven't had before. The coach looked wide-eyed, and then the kid said, but it was not our guy. He said, well, what was the number? He said, I've got him at 991.
On the outfield, not a tartan or any kind of professional track.
No. The next year, I understand that same young man who was a year behind me in school set the then school record. They were still running the 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Set the school record then at 991. So, you know, I boastfully can say I had the school record for a year, unofficially. But anyway, that was sort of one of those non-essential highlights. Right place.
A couple of my classmates played for your brother, Cal, and they were pitchers. And a couple of them, and all of them were two-way guys or multi-sport guys in high school that came here and were eventually recruited by Coach Kuntz and played there. You've shared a few stories about growing up with him, but can you share a couple of your favorite stories about Cal, whether it was from, you know, either growing up or during his time here at Campbell or when he was going on to pitch in the bigs or coach back here when he came to coach at Campbell?
Well, I'm going to take a chance and share something that maybe only I know. And it has nothing to do with any of those that you just mentioned, Stan. Calvin was an incredible baseball coach. Mm-hmm. Not only did he coach here, he coached back in Cumberland County at several schools. A job I had with the community college at that time put me out at night visiting classes that I had throughout Cumberland County. And I was in the far eastern part of the county on my way home and came by Terry Sanford High School, and it must have been about 10 o'clock in the evening. And I see the lights on in the gym, and this is in February.
Mm-hmm.
The lights are on in the gym, and I see Calvin's station wagon parked outside the gym. And I'm thinking, I'll just go in and say hello. Well, I walked in. Calvin had established a hitting net in the gym, a batting cage in the gym. He was sitting on a chair. I don't think he had a stool, but maybe a chair. And he had a basket of balls. I don't even think he had a protected net. And he was pitching from sitting down and hitting a particular spot on over the plate, outside corner, and teaching the batters how to go to right field at 10 o'clock at night. And I'm thinking, that's dedication.
Well, I can share with you a personal story, because as you well know, back in the 80s, the recreational facilities in Buies Creek for a Campbell student were basically, you had a place to go play ping pong or shoot pool at the student center, and then you could go play pickup basketball in the gym. Well, it always, for the general student population, we, you know, okay, what are we going to do tonight to entertain ourselves in this bustling metropolis of Buies Creek? And it, a lot of times it turned into, let's go play some pickup ball. And I don't know how many times that we would walk in there and it was either raining outside or it was just night or it was the winter time. And you'd walk in there, oh, no ball tonight, because the nets were up, the batting net was up there. But it was very interesting to walk and sit up in this, in the bleachers there at Carter Gym, and watch and see Coach Kuntz and his, the players that were playing for him, going through their practice regimen and how they were learning to get better. And then if you go down the list of the players that were drafted and played, and so many guys in the 80s, and they were there honing their craft when a regular college student wouldn't even consider that. But this is in basketball season, so he had to wait. You know, if the weather was bad outside or the field was unplayable, you know, you couldn't practice there in early part of the spring semester, he had to wait till the basketball teams finished practicing and hope there was no game that night. And then here the nets came down, you know, there were nets set up and everything, and he had the pitchers set up with a place to throw as well. And it was a well-oiled machine. And I'm sure that what we saw there in the mid-80s in Carter Gym was probably very similar to what you saw that night in Fayetteville.
Well, without a doubt. I think it'd be fair to say that Calvin was a transformational coach, meaning that we grew up with one coach, and you would take infield, you'd hit fly balls to the outfield after batting practice. That was pregame. Calvin goes to the major leagues, and he sees the well-oiled pregame exercise. Everybody involved at all times. And I think he brought that style to the college level here in Buies Creek, and certainly when he went on to coach in the high school, they honed their skills, as you said, by repetition, not by two or three chances to field one ball.
Right. Yeah. And it compresses the practice time for most young men, even though in their head they might have thought that someday I'm going to be hitting or pitching in Yankee Stadium. But most of these young men were here knowing that they're preparing for something beyond baseball. So it compressed that practice time to allow them to have other time to go study and be involved otherwise.
Yeah, you probably have heard the expression over time when you go back into years, I didn't want to play baseball because all you do is stand around. No, that's no longer the case. And I can certainly remember you standing out in center field, and occasionally, you know, after they hit the fly ball to right field, you're going to get one and now one to left and do it twice around and you're done. So you stand out there while other things go on. But that's I think that has been transformed to, as we both have said, well-oiled machines pregame and even during the course of the game, a backup catcher or a player coach on the third base side or guys in the bullpen. You're not just sitting around.
Right. Our guest today on Tales from the Creek is Charles Kuntz, class of 1964 and Campbell Hall of Fame member. Charles, what led you to pursue, beyond graduation, what led you to pursue a career in higher education?
Well, I was very fortunate again. My plans prior to college was to attend NC State, hopefully become an electrical engineer. Well, thinking on that detour route, 2 years here and then transfer, I enrolled in what Campbell had then as a pre-engineering program. Mm-hmm. So I continued to specialize maybe on the math side. I took the pre-engineering math courses, although they were a lot different and more difficult than I expected. But when I graduated with a degree in applied mathematics, I was not certified to be a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Student teaching conflicted with baseball.
Sure.
So I graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in applied mathematics. Well, went to work in Fayetteville just for a summer job, and it just so happened that the person, one of the people that I was working for, was the chairman of the board of what was then Fayetteville Technical Institute,
mm-hmm.
later to become Fayetteville Technical Community College. As chairman of the board, he realized the need of a math teacher at FTI, and it just so happened it was an engineering math opening. The institute was small enough, they only had one math teacher. So I historically became the second math teacher and taught there for about 4 years. And then the administration was at the cusp of expanding, and they needed a recruiter, and they created the job of registrar recruiter. And so that moved me into administration. And over the course of 10 or 12 years, maybe, I was on the student personnel side,
mm-hmm.
but a growing faction of programs was in continuing education.
Right.
So I spent, 22 years doing that. After 34 years, realized that as a state employee, may be time to look for something else.
Mm-hmm.
As I started to look, I realized the computer industry had already left me behind.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have any sales experience. But I lucked up one Sunday morning looking at the classified. Then Methodist College had a professional golf management program, and they were looking for an academic advisor for the freshman PGM program.
Mm-hmm.
Applied, got the job, and 3 months later, one semester later, the program became accredited by the PGA of America,
mm-hmm.
Which was a real feather in their cap because they had attempted on several occasions but had not been able to get accredited. But at the end of that semester, the accreditation required that they have an internship director,
mm-hmm.
along with the director and an admin assistant. So I was hired, or promoted is what I like to think, to be the internship director. So for 18 years, I had the good fortune of working with some incredibly nice young people, men and women,
mm-hmm.
looking to develop a career in the golf industry. And in the summertime, since internships were required, that left me available to travel and develop relationships with head golf professionals all over the country.
Yeah.
The program, much like the one Campbell has now, their PGA golf management program. But anyway, would place 200 or 300 students every summer in internship positions all over the country. So I did that for 18 years. So 34 years at FTCC, 18 at Methodist. But along the way, developed an advocation for broadcasting high school football games. So that, not part of the education, but it kept me in the environment of young athletes.
Well, and so we look back from the time you graduated at Campbell in the mid-1960s, and going on through now here, 60 years later, Charles Kuntz has been devoted to education in the Sandhills of North Carolina, in Fayetteville in particular, because of the work you've done with young people. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your broadcasting and the Mid-South sports and, you know, maybe some of the memorable moments there. I mean, if you're broadcasting high school football in Fayetteville, North Carolina, there's a lot of young men that were playing there on Friday night that you watched a few years later play on Sunday afternoon in the NFL.
That is exactly right, Stan. It goes back to 1979. My wife, Connie, and I had been married a few years, and she was a faculty member at Terry Sanford High School and had been assigned to be the sponsor for the cheerleaders, which meant she had to go to all the games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a good friend of ours, who is now the AD at Fayetteville Academy, Chip Bishop, I had said to him, if I can be of any assistance, scouting, keeping stats, you know, I'm going to the game anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Can I help? And he came to me 2 weeks before the opening game, said, Charles, are you still interested? I am. He said, Lloyd Foster, who is now deceased but was a legend in his own time, former president of the North Carolina Sports Broadcasters Association, was broadcasting high school football. He had begun doing it in 1952 when he was still in the Air Force at Pope Air Force Base. So we're now 79. He's still doing it. But he needed a color commentator. And the person that he had for several years had emergency heart surgery and figured he'd be out for two or three games and asked if I would care to do that, which I was glad to do, but I was scared to do it. I even called Lloyd Foster just hoping that I might be invited to do it. Well, Lloyd and I teamed up, and his son Dave, who was the stat guy, we did that every Friday night from 1979 to 1990 under a banner of the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1990, Cumberland County Schools, Cumberland County Schools and Fayetteville City Schools merged.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first time, the big schools of Terry Sanford and E. Smith High School are going to be playing county schools in conference play. My younger brother, Don, Lloyd's son, Dave, Lloyd and myself formed a company called Mid-South Sports to do Game of the Week. We didn't want to back away from just doing Terry Sanford exclusively, but we felt like there was a bigger opportunity if we became the voice of the Mid-South Conference, which we did that, not knowing that every 4 years the conference is going to change and probably change names. And over the years, we've seen the mergers of conferences and schools. But that began a small business. And I mentioned Steve Driggers earlier. Steve is now the color commentator.
Mm-hmm.
He allows me to do play-by-play. Calvin's son, Chris, is our stat guy. We have a rotating guy on the field as a sideline mic. And I think we may have been the first in the state, we at least promoted that way, to have a fourth man on the crew with a live mic on the sideline. And if that was 1990, this is 2025, so we're coming up on our 36th season.
Well, and folks, you know, for folks who don't know, and I'm a bit of a college football historian or just any kind of sports historian, but folks like Jimmy Ray and Charles Baggett and then all the way for Campbell football fans to know, Julian Hill comes out of Fayetteville to Campbell, and then he becomes the first player from Campbell to ever appear in an NFL game, and he's a tight end with the Miami Dolphins. So the talent that you've seen over the years has been some of the best.
Without a doubt, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Stan. During the course of those 35 previous years, our charter allows us to follow a local team as long as there is a team in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, we have seen our share of Eastern Regional Championship games and our share of state championship games. Mm-hmm. And we have broadcast from Keenan Stadium and Cardiff Indoor Stadium. And over the course of the years, I wish I had a roster of guys that we knew played, as we call the game, went on to the next level, be it D1, 2, or 3, and then beyond. We had the pleasure several years ago to watch a young man who was being recruited at the number one. His position was number one in the country. Young man from from Jack Britt High School.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Clemson, I think, or Georgia. Anyway, but the roster is on and on and on. And if I may take a moment of privilege and say, I think it was back in 2018, I got a call one Sunday morning, and the gentleman on the other end inquired as to whether or not our broadcast team would be interested if they presented us as a possible radio broadcast team for the Shrine Bowl.
Wow.
So, and knowing that they only choose one, a few days later, we got the call that we had been selected. So every year since, except for the COVID years, Steve Driggers and my nephew Chris traveled to Spartanburg, South Carolina. After a 2 or 3 week of almost 24/7 preparation, because we've got 40 top-level athletes from each state that we want to make sure we highlight during the course of that broadcast. But we've been very fortunate to be the radio voice for the Shrine Bowl with the Carolinas.
Charles, you start out as a math teacher at FTI, and you've gone through a number of different professional roles. What is it about broadcasting that, you know, let's face it, you've earned the right to sit back and kick your heels up and maybe play a little golf or whatever you like to do in your free time. What keeps you going in something that takes a lot of time out of the week to prepare and then every Friday night? What is it that about broadcasting that keeps you in it?
I think there's an old expression, love of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And the sport not necessarily being football, but just there's something exciting about the upcoming game.
Mm-hmm.
We do an extended Friday night broadcast that will start 1 hour before live time. And Steve Driggers will actually pre-record interviews with all 10 coaches in Cumberland County.
Wow.
And they will package that pregame show. Then we'll do the live show. Then we'll do a post-game scoreboard from the studio that, believe it or not, that once the regular season ends, the North Carolina High School Athletic Association deems our scoreboard as the official statewide postseason scoreboard. So it's there's just something magic about that Friday night environment. I know my wife would love to reclaim. I don't know how many Friday nights you get in 35 seasons, but even in my years with Lloyd, it was 46 seasons, I think, now. But
well, she gets to have Friday nights from maybe December through July, correct? Yeah. And it seems like the high school football season creeps earlier into August now.
She would probably say she has to put up with me for January to August. But
Charles, obviously, you like to stay busy. When you have free time, how do you like to spend it?
Well, a number of years ago, I satisfied a lifetime yearning to learn how to fly. And from 1985 to about 2015, I guess, whenever I had a chance, would get up in the air. Sort of got away from that. I've had a yearning to be a decent golfer. Over the years, and especially being associated with such fine young people and young players when I was at Methodist, you know, golf is probably still it. But beyond all of that, 7.5 years ago, our only child, Tommy, and his wife presented us with a grandchild. 4 years later, another one. So we have two granddaughters in Chapel Hill, and because mom and dad both worked, and the older one came along during the COVID years and did not want to put the child in daycare for obvious reasons, the other grandparents and my wife and I became de facto babysitters. We're now Uber drivers. But we go up there every week for two or three days. And she would tell you that's the love of our life, and that keeps us busy.
And that's a gift in of itself. You know, Claudia and I, you know, between her schedule, my schedule, but mainly because of the fact that her folks retired up here after our second one was born and became full-time grandparents. We never had to have childcare outside of, you know, one or two times where Claudia got one of her students to come babysit while she was teaching a class as an adjunct over here at Campbell or things like that. And we just kind of made it work. And she will tell you that my daddy never spent as much time with me as he did with Catherine and Oliver. So what a gift that is. Charles, 1992, you were inducted into the Campbell Hall of Fame. 2016, you received the Order of the Longleaf Pine, the highest civilian honor given in this state. What do those honors mean to you?
I would probably try to search for words. My first reaction was most likely undeserved. I never thought that my numbers here at Campbell were worthy of a Hall of Fame status with the guys that I know that are in the hall. So I was extremely honored when I got the call that the university then would like to induct me into the Hall of Fame. And over time, I was always in admiration of people that I heard of that were awarded the Order of the Longleaf Pine. And only stood back and admired what they did and how they were deserving of that. So when they had the surprise presentation of me at a Board of Trustees meeting at FT at Federal Tech, totally out of left field and without words really to explain, I think that other than the extended family with the grandchildren. If you look at the other side of life, to know that the Hall of Fame status, the Order of the Longleaf Pine, being appointed to the Board of Trustees at FTCC some 15 years ago, were all highlights of someone's life that you don't expect. That I truly appreciate and value. A person couldn't ask for much more, Stan, than the blessings that I've had.
Finally, Charles, can you put into words how Campbell University now and the Buies Creek community have impacted your life?
Well, I think you were close to it a while ago, Stan, when you mentioned from an engineering student, Ellen and on. Had I not made that detour and had gone to state, there's no way of even anticipating success there as a student. But I think the fact that being at Campbell, I like to think in my mind, it was during the golden years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was on first name basis, although I didn't call him by first name, Dean Burcott, mm-hmm. who ran the school. First name basis of Colonel Terrell, who was a registrar. I had been introduced to President Campbell. Coach McCall and Coach Davis were like family, and they treated my mom and dad and me and Calvin like family. Even the postmaster, even the security guard on campus, I think we had one. There was just an ease of life. I could go home every weekend, and most of the time I did. Mainly it was, I'm a homeboy. I had to see mom and dad and spend time with them and with my younger brother and sister. Campbell gave me that opportunity for my first job rather than me being sent somewhere as an intern in an engineering corporation somewhere. To be associated with the chairman of the board, who positioned me with a teaching position, which earned me the right to move into the administration to later be recognized and invited back after 18 years at Methodist, still in education, to be serve on the board. And FTCC, one of the fastest and largest growing community colleges in North Carolina, and that in and of itself has been an amazing story. And for me, just to be a part of it was very rewarding.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been Campbell Hall of Fame member Charles Kuntz. Thank you, Charles, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Stan, thank you. It's always good to be back, even though I don't hear as often as I should. But look to see me again soon in the future.